This morning, we'd like to draw your attention to 2 Kings chapter 11, and specifically the 17th verse. The southern kingdom of Judah has lapsed into one of the lowest spiritual states since the establishing of the kingdom. Athaliah is the queen. Her mother and father were the wicked rulers of the northern kingdom of Israel, Ahab and Jezebel. They were the ones that almost destroyed Israel by their introduction of the worship of Baal, the killing of the prophets of God and the servants of the Lord, and establishing the worship of Baal as the God of Israel. Athaliah married the son of the king of Judah, who in turn became the king, reigned for a short season, and their son reigned at his death, but reigned only for 1 year. And his mother, Athaliah, at his death, took over the throne by killing off all of the royal seed. She exterminated all of the sons of David that would be heir apparent to the throne, with the exception of a little baby whose name was Joash, about a year old. His nurse, when she saw what was happening, hid her little son Joash. She went into the temple, and there he was raised in the temple until he was 7 years old. When he was 7 years old, Jehoiada the priest called together some of the men who were still faithful unto Jehovah, men who were displeased with the way the nation was going under this woman Athaliah, because actually she had built a temple unto Baal. They had a priest of Baal there in Jerusalem offering offerings unto this false god. And so these men gathered together in the temple, and he said, "Now seal the doors, don't let anybody in. I'm going to show you something." And they brought out little Joash, the descendant of David, the 7-year-old boy. And they placed the crown upon his head, and they began to cry, "God save the king." Athaliah heard the commotion, and she came to find out what was going on. She saw the little boy with the crown upon his head. She began to cry, "Treason, treason." And Jehoiada the priest said, "Grab her, take her out, and kill her." And so Athaliah was assassinated, and little Joash began to reign as king over Israel. It is at this point, verse 17, that Jehoiada made a covenant between Jehovah and the king and the people that they would be Jehovah's people. Glorious covenant. It's a renewed covenant. That they would become again Jehovah's people. Now, a covenant is an agreement between two or more persons in which certain commitments are made to each other. And the covenant is based upon the mutual compliance with the terms. Now, God has made covenants with man, agreements whereby he would be their God. He would watch over them. He would bless them. He would keep them. He would preserve them. Conditioned upon that man's response to God. Through Moses, God established his covenant with the nation of Israel. If they would obey his voice and keep his commandments, He would be their God. He would bring them into the land that he had promised unto Abraham. He would bless them in the land. He would subdue their enemies. The land would produce abundantly, and they could live and dwell in peace. In that glorious relationship with God, all they had to do was to obey him and keep his commandments. And so God gave to them the Ten Commandments, the basis for the covenant. Now, as I read these Ten Commandments, I must confess to you that I find no fault with them. In fact, I agree with them. I agree that this is the way man should live. In fact, I just believe that if every man would live by these Ten Commandments, this world would be a far different place. It could be a utopia. It would be a glorious place to live. If in this country everybody just lived by these commandments, we wouldn't have any national debt. We wouldn't have any national problems. We wouldn't have the overcrowded jails. I mean, things would be glorious if people would just live by these rules that God established as the basis for the covenant. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. That's reasonable. If we're to make this covenant, he is to be our God, and we're going to receive all of these benefits from him, then it's reasonable that I should put him first in my life. Thou shalt not make any graven images to bow down to them and to worship them. That's reasonable. In fact, I've always thought that's rather foolish. A person carve out a little image or something and then bow down before it and worship it and all. It never did make sense to me. I can handle no images. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. I can handle that. I don't see any value of using God's name in a profane way. Remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. No problem. I try to keep every day holy. I live for the Lord completely. Honor thy father and thy mother. Easy. I had the greatest parents in the world. No problem. Thou shalt not murder. Well, of course not. Thou shalt not commit adultery. No way. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not covet. Maybe just a little bit. No, I can look at the law of God and I can say, hey, I can buy that. I can accept that. In my heart, I consent to the law that it is good. This is a good way to live. No problem. Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, living in this body of flesh, though I agree to the law that it is good, I find that there are times when a lie is a little more convenient than the truth. I find that there are times when I do covet. And so, though I consent to the law that it is good, and I agree that that's the right way to go, I find myself at times breaking the law. And in the breaking of the law, the breaking of the covenant, and losing out in this blessing of the covenant relationship with God. So with Israel. When Moses read to them the covenant that God established, they cried unto Moses, "All that the Lord said, we will do." Had I been in the crowd, I would have cried with them. You know, "All the Lord said, I will do." It's fair, it's good. But they didn't. Time came when they began to turn away from God. They began to worship other things. Other gods, things of material creations, man-made things became the center of their lives. Their hearts were taken away and drawn after other things. God was no longer first. Time came when they began to make little graven images and bow down to them and worship them. Time came when they forsook the Sabbaths and the covenant was broken. God was faithful. In fact, God is faithful to keep covenant, but man was not faithful. The covenant was broken. And so we've come to a time in their history, in the acknowledgement that they had broken the covenant with God. They had the temple of Baal right there in Jerusalem. People were going in and worshiping Baal. And now they recognize we've broken the covenant and they come to God. And the priest Jehoiada said, "We are going to be Jehovah's people." He made the covenant between the Lord and the people. And the king, "We're going to be Jehovah's people." Reestablishing of this covenant. "Lord, you're going to rule over our lives. We're going to be your people. We're going to keep your commandments and your statutes." And so immediately they began a spiritual reform. They went out from there. And they went to the temple of Baal and they began to destroy the temple of Baal. They broke down the altar and they took the priest Matan and they killed him. And they were determined that they would be the Lord's people, that they would enter again into this covenant relationship. But unfortunately, it didn't last long. Very soon, they were again worshiping false gods. Very soon, they had turned back into the paths of sin. And very soon, again, they were being harassed by their enemies and were experiencing all kinds of national difficulties. Until they finally lost the benefits and the blessings of having God watch over them and keep them. They were taken into captivity by their enemies. The land laid desolate. And they were persecuted and made slaves because they had broken the covenant of God. As I look at the covenant, I think that it's an extremely fair covenant. When you consider the benefits that God had promised to give them, the things that God would do for them, and all they had to do is just leave him first in their lives and live in an honest, right kind of a life, it was very reasonable, and yet it's tragic that man did break it and thus lost this relationship with God with the resultant benefit. But God now has established a new covenant with man. Because man could not keep to the terms of the old covenant, simple as they were, the covenant failed because of man's weakness, the weakness of man's flesh. And ultimately, it seems that the flesh of man would triumph over the walk in the Spirit. And though I can accept that walking in the Spirit is the best way to live, yet it's so easy to again come under the dominion of my flesh. And thus the failure of the covenant, the breakdown of relationship. Moses said to the people, "Know therefore that Jehovah thy God, he is God. He's the faithful God which keeps the covenant and mercy with those that love him and keep his commandments." He's faithful. It was man who failed. And thus God established a new covenant. Jesus, the night in which he was betrayed, the night before his crucifixion, when he was with his disciples at the feast of the Passover, he took the cup and he said, "This cup is a new covenant in my blood that is shed for the remission of sins." God is seeking to establish with us through Jesus Christ a new covenant. The old covenant failed because the people failed. Predicated upon their obedience, it failed. On their works, it failed. So God has established now a new covenant that is predicated not upon man's work, but upon God's work. Upon God's finished work in Jesus Christ. You remember when Jesus was on the cross, he cried, "It is finished." The work of man's redemption is a finished work. And to enter into this new covenant with God, I must simply believe in Jesus Christ and receive him as the Lord of my life. The work has been done. It's completed. And this new covenant now is predicated upon the faithfulness of God to keep his word. My simple believing in him. And so I live with God in this new covenant relationship through Jesus Christ, where he has promised me that he would never leave me or forsake me, that he'd be there to help me and see me through any difficulty, that he'd provide for me, that he would bless me, that I would be his son, I would be an heir, I would be a joint heir with Jesus Christ, I would have eternal life and enjoy the blessings of the glory of his eternal kingdom. I mean, all of this God has covenanted to do for me if I will simply believe upon his Son who he sent to take my sins and to turn my life over to the Lordship of Jesus. I can't describe to you the joy, the blessings that I have experienced in this covenant relationship with God. The wonderful good things that God has done for me. I walk around during the week just in a state of ecstasy as I think of all of the blessed things that God has done for me. My cup truly overflows. My life is just blessed every direction I turn as I live in this covenant relationship with God. For God is faithful and keeps his covenant. Now I am given power to keep his commandments. And when I stumble, it doesn't break the covenant, because the covenant isn't predicated upon my never stumbling, my never falling. But when I fall, he picks me up. He dusts me off. He says, okay, now Chuck, stand. And this is the reason why you fell. You were trusting in yourself. You thought you could do it, but you can't do it apart from me. Hey, you've got to just trust in me in this covenant. For this covenant to work, you've got to just rely upon my strength and my help. Let me do it for you. And I find that so easy. In fact, it's too easy. I keep trying to do it for myself. And I keep stumbling. And he keeps lifting me up. And he teaches me to rely upon him and to trust in him and in his power and in his work. That makes the excuse so lame. Well, I would like to be a Christian, but I just don't think I can live that kind of life. I don't think, you know, I don't want to fail. And so, you know, don't want to start. Oh, that's so lame. Of course you're going to fail. Of course you're going to stumble. Unfortunately, you're human, just like the rest of us. But the thing is, this new covenant is so glorious that when I fail, when I stumble, the Lord lifts me up. He restores me, and then he strengthens me. He says, now next time, trust in me. Next time, lean on me. Don't try and do it in yourself. Let me do it for you. And I've found that he is so gracious and so helpful coming in and helping me in those areas of weakness and failure. And now as I look back, there were areas of my life where there was such weakness and such failure. And now those are some of the strongest areas of my life, because I know that I'll trip up there. And so I know when I get to that point, trust in him. Hang on tight, Chuck. You're going through some slippery places. Hang on tight. And I've learned to hang on tight. And he sustains me and he helps me. And thus the covenant stands. And the covenant will stand. Because it isn't based on something so weak and flimsy as me, my faithfulness to the word of God. But it is based upon God's faithfulness to his own word, to keep his word, his promise that he has made to you. Peter describes it and puts it in perspective. He said, thank God that he has brought us into this born again experience, into an inheritance that is incorruptible and undefiled and fades not away, that's reserved in heaven for you who are being kept by the power of God. This is the covenant. I've been born again by the work of God's Spirit. And I now have a living hope because Jesus rose from the dead. I now have an inheritance, eternal inheritance. It's incorruptible. It's undefiled. It doesn't fade away. It's reserved in heaven for me as I'm being kept by the power of God. You say, well, what's my part of the covenant? Surely I've got something to do. Yes. Peter says, through faith. You're being kept by the power of God through faith. It's just believing and trusting God to keep his word to me. And I have found, as Moses said, God is faithful to keep covenant, and God has kept his covenant with me. And as the result, I live a life of victory over the enemy. For I live in his victory. Shall we stand? In the final analysis, things always boil down to the simplest terms. You are either his people or you're not his people. You either have entered into the covenant with God or you're not in the covenant relationship with God. You either have hope or you have no hope. You're either walking after the Spirit or after the flesh. But the glorious thing is, God making things as simple as He did, you can change radically in a hurry. Even while you're standing there, in your heart, you can say, "Oh, Lord, You will be my God, and I will be one of Your people. I will serve You. I give my life to You." And just that simply, you can enter into this covenant with God and you receive this change of life 180 degrees as He turns you around and sets you now on His path and begins to guide, begins to strengthen, begins to take over as you walk with Him. May the Lord bless you and may His hand be upon you this week as you walk in fellowship with God. May you experience truly the nearness of His presence, the strength of His Spirit, and the power of His love as He works in you and as He works through you to touch that needy world around you. In Jesus' name. The Lord bless thee,
the Lord bless thee
and keep thee.